This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
I don't want to partner with people that are looking for a get-rich-quick scheme. This is not a get-rich-quick scheme for me. I'm building longevity. So I look for partners that are in this for the long haul, not just looking to do a quick flip or a quick bill so they can go out and buy a car or buy some shoes or a bag. That's not my people, not my tribe.
Well, hello and welcome back to the Color of Money podcast. I am your host, Julia Lachey Israel, and I am joined with, hold your seats, friends. It's been a minute, but Bo Menkheti is back on the Color of Money podcast today. Okay. It's me and Bo and our special guest. You just heard from her a couple episodes ago. We had an episode with the Nicole Ambrose, and she was spitting so much knowledge and dropping so many gems that I said, listen, we have got to have you back for a whole nother conversation. And we did not wait long. We needed her back immediately. And so immediately we have Nicole Ambrose back, joined with my co-host, Bo Menkheti. And today we're going to talk about something that Nicole touched on in the last episode, which was about development. She shared a little bit with us about the development that she's doing, this project with her partner that runs Black Girls in Real Estate. I'm a member of that group. And they have some really cool things going on. So I thought this would be a great conversation for Bo to have with Nicole, because as you may or may not know, Bo is a major developer on the East Coast. Bo is the CEO of the Menkheti Group. The Menkheti Group transforms lives, communities, and people. Is it people?
Lives, careers, and communities.
Okay, I said it wrong. Okay. Through real estate.
Love it.
Much of that is development. Bo works on a lot of huge development projects. We always say Bo has the keys to the city of D.C. If he doesn't have the keys, he's with the guy that does. First, Bo, reintroduce our listeners to what your role is in the scope of development. And then we'll hear from Nicole about what she's got going on in the world of development.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Julia. It's exciting to be here today and to have Nicole. You know, my journey has been very much from grounded in a successful real estate business and a real estate team to a brokerage to being able to get into the development space and grow it. So I'm really excited to get the insight from Nicole as she has been pioneering that in a big way. Just real quick, my background started out as a part-time real estate agent 19 years ago in Washington, D.C., and I owned one rental property, and we've grown a bit since then. We've developed over 3.5 million square feet of mixed-use real estate development in the Mid-Atlantic and up in New England. We've got about $2 billion worth of real estate projects currently under development up and down the East Coast, and we recently launched a real estate development fund to support BIPOC developers that are looking to scale their business around the country and doing work in urban areas. So it's been a great, wonderful ride. I've learned a lot, and I'm excited to learn some more today as we dig in with Nicole. So thanks for that, Julia.
I got so excited. I was like, oh my God, that is amazing. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been quite a journey. And I think you're pioneering an amazing journey right now as well. You know, Nicole has totally hit it out of the park as a real estate practitioner, moved into coaching and helping others succeed in the real estate sales business. And now you're blazing the trail in real estate development. So I'd love to start off with just like, talk to us a little bit about that path, you know, spend a few minutes on what made you successful in the real estate sales business and as a coach and transitioning and get into the real estate development space when you were crushing it in those spaces. What was the impetus for all that?
One of the things that I think I touched on a little bit last week is that I just love people and I love to see people win. I love to see people grow. I came from a very, very humble beginning where I didn't see entrepreneurship growing up. My father was one of the first African-American executives at United Partial 30 years ago. And my mom worked at AT&T. So I came from a very, very corporate background. So growing up in Chicago, even going to the stores in the neighborhood, people didn't look like me. So I didn't really understand until I moved to Atlanta about entrepreneurship. Then when I jumped into the real estate space and realized that you're not working for anybody, you really, really own your own business as a real estate agent, it gave me an opportunity to take the skills that I had learned in all of my corporate jobs and move it over into the real estate space. And I think that that's the key that made me really successful in real estate, is that I didn't reinvent the wheel. Policies and procedures, SOPs, everything that you do in corporate, time management, clocking in at a certain time, clocking out at a certain time, all of those things are the things that I continue as I began to work for myself. And that's really what made me successful. And then having a high focus on people. I'm a servant. I know that God put me here to lead people to financial freedom through home ownership and investing. And I just focused on that. I found my purpose. I found my passion in this real estate lane. And I just served people. I came from a place of service. And that's what made me really successful. As I started helping people purchase homes, what I realized is something that I didn't know, although my parents owned their own home, I didn't realize that real estate was one of the fastest ways to gain wealth in our communities. I was just seeing blocks that were developing, and I wanted to have people that looked like me go into those neighborhoods and buy homes. So 2 years after I had really started going into the parks and, like I told you guys before, and doing home buying seminars and credit repair seminars in the roughest parks of Atlanta, teaching people how to purchase homes, they were coming back to me a year or two later saying they were getting letters in the mail saying that they had purchased the house for $150,000, but now in the areas that they purchased, then the houses were worth $300,000. And I was like, oh, wait a minute, I might be onto something here. And then that's when I really began to learn about gentrification, and I start pumping people in those areas, pumping people in those areas, pumping people in those areas. And as people were getting pumped in those areas, I was getting more calls about, Nicole, hey, I've got $200,000 in equity in just a 3-year period just because you told me to buy in this area. And most of those people went in those areas, bite, kicking, and scratching. Nicole, it's no way I'm living over here. I refuse. And I'm like, just give it 3 years. The neighborhood's going to do what you need it to do.
I was going to stop you there for 1 second because I love how you talked about helping people see the potential in the neighborhoods that sometimes we know so well, but we devalue because we know them well. A fundamental premise of our investment thesis is that we invest in cities that have strong macroeconomic and demographic fundamentals, sort of job growth and population growth, but we invest in neighborhoods on the other side of perception.
Yes.
That are in the path of growth. And could you share with us a little bit about, you're just talking about the power of those neighborhoods and the opportunity for communities to own and participate in that growth.
Absolutely.
When did you see that? How did you identify those neighborhoods where you were sending people?
So some of the things that I began to see, I would see a block, right? As I'm going, and I didn't know about driving for dollars at the time, but I was in essence driving for dollars when I was looking for my clients' affordable housing, right? So I'm going up and down these blocks and I'm seeing new construction on one block, and then the whole rest of the block is just demolished. So I start calling the county and asking what things were coming in those areas. There's a lady, Michelle, who was very instrumental in telling me the areas that were going to start to see more development permits and areas where Chick-fil-A's were coming, Targets were coming, hospitals were coming, different things were coming. And I'm telling people from that perspective, these are the things that are coming. And if these are the things that are coming, other people are going to start moving into these areas.
Is that the thing? That's the key indicator, right? Oh, there's a Chick-fil-A. All right, here it goes. It's about to pop off. Is that the indicator?
Walmart sometimes, and it's a Target.
Yeah, it's funny too, though, because we always think about, oh, it's when the Chick-fil-A showed up. It's when the Starbucks opened. But what you just heard from Nicole, there's some real brilliance in that. She went and asked the people who are planning, because when you're walking down the street and you see an open Starbucks, or you're in that long old line around the Chick-fil-A, that doesn't just happen. The process for that started many years before. It started sometimes when the county or the city decided they were going to invest in the road network over there. They were going to redo the streets. It started when somebody actually acquired that land, when they went through a planning process, when they got a permit, and it's probably was a couple of years after they got that permit that the thing was actually built and was actually open. So when you start to think about timing, we oftentimes show up late to the party because yes. we're looking only at the surface. And what you heard from Nicole is she went below the surface to understand that there is a system and a plan for what is going to happen that lets you be able to predict the future. Mm-hmm. And really, it's not predicting the future. It's actually that stuff just got put in motion.
Yes.
At a much earlier point.
Absolutely. And I didn't know. I didn't have a coach. I was just going through the School of Hard Knocks, honestly, just trying to put two and two together. And when I started realizing the things that were coming to these areas, I'm telling my clients, I had one young lady. She was a very, very bougie, we'll say, individual, right? We had been looking for our house for a month. I had to blindfold her to take her to this house. I got her in my car, and I never put clients in my car just for safety reasons. I have them follow me. So I had her meet me, and she said, Nicole, why am I parking my car at this gas station? I said, do you trust me? We're going two blocks away. Do you trust me? And she said, yeah, I think so. So I got her out the car, walked her up the steps, put her in the house. And mind you, we have been looking for a house for a month. I took the blindfold off. She said, oh my God, this is exactly what I've been looking for. It's absolutely gorgeous. She went running through the house and she's like, Nicole, this is it. Go get your computer. Type the contract now. And she was like, wait a minute. Why did you have to blindfold me to bring me over here? I took her outside and she said, hell no. I am not living on this block. Long story short, fast forward. 3 years later, she called me and she was boo-hoo crying. That house was the first house on that block to get renovated. And she's 5 minutes from the Beltline. If anybody watching knows what the Beltline did 4 years ago, she actually has $300,000, $322,000 to be exact, in equity in her home. And see, those are the things that as real estate agents, we have to be better about teaching our clients. Don't buy for aesthetics, especially on your first purchase. You have to buy because this is a wealth tool that can drive you to whatever your next thing is, whatever that looks like. So now with $300,000, whatever she wants to do, she can go out and do it.
Wow. I love that. And just this idea that so often where we lose wealth in our communities is pursuing the aesthetic absent the core investment fundamental, so that when wealth gets created, often in our neighborhoods, in our own communities, we aren't privy to realizing that wealth. What I'm loving about what Nicole's talking about is how she is seizing her role and her expertise as a realtor to help ensure that our communities actually participate in the wealth that gets created as they grow. And I always say there's no such thing as displacement gentrification. There's only such a thing as non-participation. Everybody yes. wants their community to be great, but everybody yes. wants to participate in the wealth creation, in the jobs, in the restaurants, in the things that are part of that community as they go forward. Switching gears a little bit, was there a specific moment when you said, hey, I want to get into development?
It was a no-brainer. Immediately when I started seeing those numbers, I was like, wait a minute, I got to start flipping, but I also need to start buying holding. So in that moment, I started flipping.
So what'd you do? Take me back to that moment for a second. So once you decide you're going to do that, like, what do you actually do? You just like, oh, I went out and flipped the house and started buying a whole bunch of like, what'd you do?
No, like step by step, though, really, because Bo, a lot of people say at least once a week, people say to me, I want to be a real estate developer. I want to be a real estate developer. But to Bo's point, how?
So I was looking at my Alta statements that I would get at the closing table, and I'm seeing these investors and I'm seeing how much money they're making. So I went to those exact same blocks because remember, half the blocks weren't developed. So I went right back to those same blocks. I didn't have the capital to do it myself. So I got a couple partners, partnered with people like Janine Searcy and Black Girls in Real Estate. And we would just bring people together. And we went and bought the first property. And we actually took a bath on the first property because we didn't know what we were doing. We just went to Home Depot. Some people were asking us, did we need paint? Did we need plumbing? Did we need electrical? And we said, we absolutely do. And we didn't know anything about permits. So we went and we had them do the work. The city showed up, and guess who didn't have any permits? And guess who made us tear all the walls down so they could get back there to see if, you know, the plumbing was right, if the electrical was right, the rough ends were right. So we had to tear all of the walls down and come to find out they weren't right. We had to start all over again. So we ended up bringing $5,000 to the table on that deal. Experience is the best teacher. From there, we started interviewing GCs. We would go door to door. When we would see renovations happening, we would go door to door talking to the contractors, and we would wait until they finished those projects, and we would go and look at how successful they were on those projects. And then we would ask them for the numbers to their GCs. And that's how we ended up coming up with our GC team.
I love that. So you said that sometimes failure is often the best teacher. And you talked about the importance of that first flip actually not going well. One of the things you said you learned was, hey, you got to have permits and you got to have legit GC. What were some of the lessons that you learned along the way? Because I think one of the biggest things that people don't always think about when they shift to development is that it's a different level of risk. Like when we're selling, there's really an upside. There's rarely a huge downside, if at all. And now you're moving into a space where you're putting up dollars. There's a physical asset at play, and now you got risk. So what were some of the lessons that you learned early on that, had you not learned them early on, might have impacted you later in a significant way? Or what do you think are the key things people need to get their heads around when they start?
Planning is so important. One of the things that people do, they'll just go out and they'll see a house, they'll buy it. They don't look at what the return on the investment is going to be. They don't see what the neighborhood is doing. And then they don't actually go and do the investigation of properties that have already been sold or under contract, so you can know what people in those areas are actually looking to buy. If it's a house where they're selling moderns, you don't want to go and drop a traditional house there. It may not sell. So with that, just doing your proper research and then planning it out, making sure that you have a complete design for the house, and you know everything from the tile, the fixtures, light fixtures, refrigerator, everything that you're going to put, and not just wing it. These things have to really be planned out, because one of the things that you're going to find is when you just go by the seat of your pants, you lose so much money. And one of the things that we've gotten really, really good at, we ended up getting a storage, because when we were out looking for windows, or we're out looking for, you know, the best prices on toilets and doors and things like that, it's cheaper to buy that stuff in bulk. So if you know exactly what you're doing, you're able to buy things. So when you get ready to do your next project, you don't always just have to go out and do the onesie twosies. You can actually buy things in bulk, and it'll save you money in the long term in your projects. But the most important thing that we learned along the way, and that I think has helped us, is we were being cheap initially. So like I told you, we were getting the people from Home Depot and different places like that. What ended up happening for us is we made sure that we got professionals. You don't have to make all of the money. If you do enough projects, the money will come. So hiring professional people who can really take your project from beginning to end is so important. Don't hire your cousin just because he did your floor. Really go out and get you a solid GC.
Yeah, you talked a little bit about getting referrals and asking and seeing the work of different GCs. How else did you pick partners? You know, you jumped into this, you said, with a bunch of partners. How did you select the people that you got into business with?
I'm very selective. Even right now with the development project that we're looking to do, there's one main thing for me is that I understand, because of that first project that I took a loss on, I understand that there's no guarantee in real estate, and we can have 20 back-to-back rain days and you may not be able to finish a project when you say that you need to finish it. So all of the people that I go in partnership with, A, we have to have a contract, but B, I like to partner with people. I'm very transparent in what could go good and what could go bad. And I don't want to partner right away with people that are using their very last to go and do a development project, because those are going to be the people that will immediately run back to you and say, hey, my car just broke down, I need the money back, and we're in the middle of a project. You want to make sure that you're in partnership with people where you right off the bat can avoid stress. That's a stressful situation when you're in the middle of the project and one of the partners is financially strapped for cash, and everything that happens, they're asking you to come back and get money back from the project. And we're still 5-6 months into the project. So that's one of the things I like to make sure that people really understand what their investment role is going to be, what their capital insertion role is going to be, what their return on their investment is going to be. And I don't want to partner with people that are looking for a get rich quick scheme. This is not a get rich quick scheme for me. I'm a grandmother now, so I want to be able to change the narrative for my grandchildren. I never want my grandchildren to have to go through the things that I did. And with that, I'm building longevity. So I look for partners that are in this for the long haul, not just looking to do a quick flip or a quick bill so they can go out and buy a car or buy some shoes or a bag. That's not my people, not my tribe.
How do you think about when you talk about being in this for the longevity and for the legacy? Are there specific goals? Like if you're not in it for the fancy car, or the shoes, or the bag, did you set goals? Or when you got into this, did you have some thing that you're shooting at when you think about that legacy and longevity?
Absolutely. So a lot of my fix and flips and my bills, the majority of them, I do them so I can go out and buy and holds. By the time I get ready to retire from this business, I want to know that I have 100 paid off doors. If I can secure 100 paid off doors and be able to really leave, I have some annuity goals that I have for my children and for my, I have a grandson and one and two on the way. So with my three grandchildren, I have some annuities that I want to leave for them. And I want to leave a legacy of 100 paid off doors. So for me, that's what this is about. It's not about the cars and the clothes and the glitz and the glam. It's really about the power of really owning the blocks that we live on.
That's awesome.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
How's it coming? How are we doing towards the 100 paid off doors?
I'm right at about 22. We have more doors, but paid off doors, we're right at about 22. So we're just awesome. Trucking on along.
I love that. But doors over time lead to paid off doors, right? That's the long game.
Yeah.
If you're paying them down, they lead to paid off doors over time. So
this has just been a learning experience for me. We were buying individual homes at first, and now we have moved to multifamilies. You'll get there much faster with multifamilies. And in essence, if you buy in cities like Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Milwaukee, that gives you an opportunity to pay the same for, in essence, some multifamilies, some duplexes, and some triplexes that you would a single family here in Atlanta. So I just diverted my attention. I offloaded a couple of my single families and went up to Chicago and bought some multifamilies.
Well, as you made this transition, I always think about that our business has been sort of half real estate development investment, half real estate sales and brokerage. And I've always felt like there were some fundamentally different skills that were necessary to excel in both of those. There's some similarities and there's also some differences. I'd love your perspective. You know, you're such a multifaceted and gifted person. As you've used these different parts of yourself, what do you think has been the biggest change? Like which skills are really different in the development side and in the real estate ownership side than in the sales side, and which are the same?
So I think for the real estate sales side, as an agent and as an investor, I'm a servant. And with that, when it comes to my traditional real estate sales, I've been successful because I'm a servant. With my investor hat, I make sure that from an investment standpoint, it's the same principle. I'm looking to buy multifamily properties in areas that I know people need housing, but not just housing. I don't ever want to be a slumlord, even if it means that I have to take a smaller cut to make sure that we're putting more money into our buildings to make sure that our buildings look really, really nice. We want to give people affordable, beautified homes. So something that you can go to work and come home to and be happy and love that you're there. So being a servant in my investment portfolio is the same servant that I am in my real estate business. The difference is you have to be more strategic in the real estate agent role. It really is just me going out being a educator in the community and educating people on where they should buy, what would be a good buy, and attracting clients to me. With that investor hat, it's more systematic. It's more of a, now you have to plan out what your personal portfolio needs to look like. And you have to go in and dive into numbers on a much deeper level. I think it takes more strategy as an investor than it does as a real estate agent. As a real estate agent, as long as you're just in the communities, it's a numbers game. The more people that you talk to, the more deals you're going to close. As a investor, it really is understanding the dollars, understanding the numbers, understanding the after repair values, understanding the contractors, really understanding the holistic picture of, if I buy this, if I develop this, if I flip this, if I build this, is somebody going to want to purchase it back from me? And if so, why and how? And how do we get to the finish line? I think it takes more brain power in that development arena because you have so many moving pieces. Where in real estate, you have moving pieces, but you're not in control of those. You're in complete control of every dominance in the real estate investor arena. And you can, as long as you go out and you talk to a ton of people in real estate as an agent, you're going to make money. Again, it's a numbers game. Iron sharpens iron. But in this development piece, you're putting your own money up. Your own money is at risk. Or even if it's somebody else's money, your credit is at risk. So you have to be very, very strategic. And you have to have the right team. I sold 300 homes as a real estate agent and didn't have a team. It was just me. As a developer, it's completely different. As an investor, it's completely different. You need to have a very, very, and I take that back. As an agent, I did have a team. It was me and God. But as an investor, you really have to have strong GCs. You got to have electricians. You got to really have a completely different skill set that you learn if you really study your craft as a real estate agent.
It's an interesting perspective that you just shared that, like, as a real estate agent, you have the opportunity to start out as an individual performer. You have other people you work with, but you can really drive your success and you can pick the time at which you choose to work in a more team environment. But in the investment world, especially the more complex the development is you get into, you're in a team, multidimensional environment, like day one. People always say, I want to be a developer. I say, well, do you know what a developer does? They don't really do anything. They've got to coordinate a whole bunch of people who do stuff. So you got to know enough about and have the right people doing the right things. But in the development world, it really is a place where you're working through others, right? And who those others are really matters. There isn't an option to just do it yourself because unlikely, unless you're really, really special, that you're going to tear out every piece of wall, hammer every nail, put in every piece of drywall, right? And so you start from a place of being in collaboration. And that's an interesting mindset. So talk to me like I'm just starting out. So I've had some success. I haven't sold 300 houses, but maybe I'm selling 20 houses a year, you know, and I'm starting to build my business and I'm deeply involved in my community and I'm worried about how can I make a bigger difference. And I'm also thinking about future wealth for my family. What would you suggest is the first thing I do if I'm thinking about making that transition from being purely a real estate practitioner on the sales side into starting to do investments?
Do you know how many real estate agents I know that don't own their own home? There's so many real estate agents that don't own their own home. The first thing that I would do is I would buy a property for myself that I know that would be purchased in the right area that I know that would definitely be a wealth gaining tool for me. That's the first thing that I would do starting out as a new agent if I didn't own my own home. From there, I don't know many professions, and I'm not the smartest cookie in the cookie jar, not the sharpest knife in the drawer. But what I do know for sure is that if you close one $400,000 deal, that's a $12,000 commission. Most people are not walking away with $12,000 on their job. So if you're closing 20 transactions, that means that you're doing that 1.5 times a month. So you're making $10,000 a month. I would tell people right off the bat, live way below your means. Whatever your means are, live way below that. And I would say invest 50% of everything that you make into some form of an investment vehicle that's going to lead you to being able to change your life, because real estate has so many ebbs and flows. I was selling, you know, at a really, really high level, and now my focus has shifted, but there were people that were selling at a high level the last 2 years. The market shifted and so did their business. So you have to make sure that when you're selling, if you're selling 10 homes, 5 homes, 20 homes, 30 homes, whatever it is that you're selling, I know that if you live below your means while you're in the trenches and you invest more than you spend after you pay all of your bills, if you're living below your means, you take 50% of what's left and you put that in an account until you can build up where you can either do a fix and flip or a new build. If you're going to do a new build, most banks won't allow you to do a new build as a new investor. So I would say get you a partner if you're going to do a new build and take that money, all the money that you get, go out, rinse, repeat. Rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat until you don't need a partner anymore. Then when you can get out and do it on your own, go and do it on your own. And once you're doing it on your own, I would say take the monies that you're getting from those fix and flips and those new builds and start doing buy and holds in areas that you know the building is going to pay for itself, but it's an area where you know the area is going to do exactly what you need it to do over the next 5 to 10 years.
Live below your means, invest more than you spend, and focus on areas with future growth.
Yes.
I love it. That's a long-term recipe for success. Do you think there's anybody who shouldn't? You know, you coach a lot of real estate agents. Do you ever tell anybody, no, please don't get into, you shouldn't get into investing?
Yes. And this is probably going to sound really, really terrible, but you guys know I'm transparent. That investment piece is something that you have to be consistent with every minute of every day, because you are in essence just controlling pieces on the chessboard. If you have no self-control and you can't get up and do the things that you're supposed to do in your real estate business to help yourself be successful, and you can't control self, there's no way you can control other people. You can't just leave these projects to just run themselves. You got to be out there. You got to be on top of what's going on. You have to be checking your scope of work. There are things that you have to make sure that you're manning in that investment piece. And if you can't man yourself, and if you're all over the place as an individual agent and you're not disciplined, I know a lot of agents that just have zero self-discipline. Zero. If you have no self-discipline, going over into that investment arena is just going to help you do one thing: lose a ton of money.
There you heard it. I love it. Straight facts. So one other question kind of in this space, you've been part of some large networks, right? Mm-hmm. Where you've been able to partner with others, experience the power of collective action, and also learn. If I'm looking to get into real estate investment, there's like so many spots out there. There's tons of people happy to take my money for their latest class, their latest course, their latest sign up. The guru that's on Instagram that I want to follow. I always say, how do you cut through all that? What questions should I ask? What should I look for? Because I think so much of our younger generation today just looks at the glitz and the glamour. I saw him on Instagram with his fake private plane. And so we're going to go learn wealth building from this fool. But they never ask the question, did the person actually ever develop a building? So what should people be looking for as they look to affiliate with groups, given that there has been over the last 10 years, especially such a multiplying factor of people talking about wealth building and talking about these things? How do I pick through all the chaff to find where the real substance is?
Well, I thought we were forming a really, really good relationship, and then you just gut punched me like, oh, right in the side. I have paid 2 different coaches, and I won't say their names. I'm not into bashing people, but one especially who was a social media just hundreds of thousands of followers and gave him $25,000 and I got nothing. When I say nothing, nothing, but I didn't do my due diligence. I saw on Instagram, he had a ton of followers. He talks good. He had a fancy house, had a fancy car, had the Rolex, had the whole thing, you know? So I think we start looking at the material things that people have and we listen to what they say and we don't look beyond it. One of the things that I'll be honest with you, since I've really gotten focused on my business, somebody will look at me on a day to day and think that I am a bum that lives under the bridge. Because when you are really in the trenches, I don't really have time to be on social media. I don't man my social media page the way that I need to because I'm in the trenches. I have 25,000 followers, but I promise you I'm doing more work than some of these people that have a couple hundred thousand followers. So what I would tell people is get off the surface. Get off the surface. We are in a microwave society where we want everything fast. Nothing comes fast, which is why I'm at the counties doing my due diligence. And I'm really learning this stuff on my own to the point where I can. And then that way, when I go and hear something and I read a ton of books, I'm in my office now. This is a library and I read all day, every day. I try to watch TV a third of the time that I read. I'm reading, reading, reading. I'm educating myself. I'm listening to podcasts. So now when I do go to reach for this mentor, I'm able to have an educated conversation because I didn't wait for somebody to give me the information. I kicked the door down and I took the information. So as I get that information, when I'm talking to these gurus, I can already tell if they're BSing me because I've read enough, I've watched enough, I've compared enough, I've looked at enough statistical data to know what's right and what's wrong. Now I just need somebody to really give me the fundamentals. So with that, when I'm talking to these people, I have the education 50% of the way. I just need somebody to take me that other 50% of the way. And then from there, I'm not going to give you a dime until you show me at least 10 people, 10 to 15 people. If you say that you can teach me how to be a millionaire, I need to see 10 people that you taught how to be a millionaire. If you tell me that you can teach me how to go out and do a development and build a subdivision, I need to see two subdivisions that you built because the first one could have been a fluke. If you say that you are the guru at fixing and flipping and that you flipped 50 properties, show me who you taught to do it that is now has 50 properties under their belt. You have to really ask for receipts in this day and age because you can be anybody that you want to on social media. You can wake up every day and decide that you can be who you dreamed about last night. And if you have one or two properties that you flipped, one or two properties that you built, it takes a long time to do those projects. So people will see you at construction sites every day for 6 months. And they think that, oh my God, this person, no, that was one project. Mm-hmm. They're a guru off of one project. It's just that that project took a long time. So it looks like this is what they do every day. Ask for receipts. If you ask me about my real estate coaching program, I can give you 100 people right now that are in the top 10% that I've coached. And I can give you their names, their telephone numbers, their social media handles. And when you call them, they're going to talk to me. Not every one of them, you know, probably likes me because I am hard on my students. I'm very hard on my students. They may not like me as a person, but they respect me. You don't ever have to like me, but you're going to respect me because of what I give. Right. So I think that's what we got to start being a better student of investigation when we're looking for mentors and stop looking at people for what they have, because most people, there are two types of influencers. There are influencers that are actually out here doing the work, and there are influencers that get up every day to make it look like they're doing the work on social media. Pick wisely.
Wow. I think she might have just wrapped that whole thing up there. But here's what I'd like to say. You have such a wealth of information, and Bo has such a wealth of information on development. If I'm someone listening, I am someone listening. I am a listener, but I'm listening to this conversation and really feeling like surely you both have tools somewhere else. And honestly, information and knowledge is not always free. This podcast is free. The purpose of the Color of Money podcast is to help you earn more, learn more, and build wealth. But you both actually have information that is and should be monetized. And so, Nicole, share with us if somebody's listening to you and it's like, I need to know that lady. I need her to coach me. I need her to teach me. How can they do that? You got this information for free. You got, what has it been, 40 minutes of excellent expert information free of charge. But the knowledge you have, your time shouldn't always be free. How can we actually get in business with you to learn more about you?
Before I give you that information, Bo, I'm only successful because I'm always a student. I'm raising my hand. If you would take me on as a student, I will be the best student you ever had. Listen to me. I don't have a lot, but whatever I have, I'm willing to invest it into my teaching, my coaching. Where you are is where I'm looking to be. Again, if you would have me, or if you could just help me in any way, I would be honored to be a student, and I would be the best student that you ever had.
I appreciate that. I love your attitude about it. I would happily take you as a student if you will also be my teacher as we move through that path, because
let's do it. And you guys, please feel free. This is what I want to do for the people that are looking at this podcast right now. I don't want to do something that's surface level. I really want to have conversations with you guys and really see where it is that you want to go. And I'm not a good fit for everybody, but I know a lot of people, so maybe I can direct you in the right direction. So if you are serious about really changing the narrative, because I wasn't looking for a handout when I was trying to make it, I was looking for a hand up and somebody that was really going to help me and be sincere in helping me. So if you really, really need help, I'm not even going to give you my website. I want you to email me. I want you to tell me exactly what it is that you're looking to do. And I'm personally going to respond back to the emails and see how and if I can help you. So I'm going to give you guys my email address. It's info@NicoleAmbroseRealEstate.com. Send me an email. I have failed forward so many times. I've been humbled so many times in this business, and I've celebrated a ton of success. And I just want to give it back without having to break the bank. I'm blessed beyond measure. So, you know, my programs are more reasonable than any other program you'll ever come across, because I really do my coaching, because all my partners come from my coaching programs.
Now, I knew this was going to be a match made in heaven. I'm so glad that we had this episode and this conversation and this podcast. This is a demonstration of collaboration over competition, which is what the event was that I met you at, Nicole. Thank you again so much for being on today's podcast. Thank you, Bo, of course, for being the co-host today on the podcast. What's the one thing you want to leave the listeners with, Nicole?
I think more than anything, Nike has instructed us the best for years. Just get out and do it. Just go and do it. Don't be afraid to fail. Fail forward. I probably would have gotten there much later, but I would not be where I am if it was not for my team. My team is absolutely amazing. My collaborations are amazing, and I know that I can't do it by myself. Find you your tribe and get out and just go do it. It's not hard.
I find it's been so powerful, and I just wanted to draw it out to the surface. We've had a couple of conversations recently with folks that say, I'm waiting for my opportunity. And what you've heard today from Nicole is that opportunity is not a passive thing. Opportunity, learning, those are things you go seek. They're not things that happen to you. They're things that you go make happen. And so I love Nicole's closing of just go do it. But for those of you that are out there thinking about how you can learn, how you can grow, how you can take that next step, remember that that is something that doesn't just happen to you. It's something that you go make happen.
I love that. Thank you both. And thank you for listening to the Color of Money podcast. We'll catch you on the next episode. Till next time, friends. Well, that just concluded our final episode in season one of the Color of Money podcast. That's right. We have been doing this podcast now for an entire year. We've had a year of fabulous guests, just like Nicole, and so many great conversations. We'll be taking a short break, but don't worry. We'll still be bringing you great, new, exciting episodes that we already recorded. Some of our past favorite episodes will be playing throughout the month of August. And then in September, we'll be back new and fresh with new podcast episodes on season two of the Color of Money podcast. Stay tuned. We look forward to seeing you then. Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.